Chapter 11. That night, after the rain had stopped, and he had checked all leaks from the long dry spell and seen that pans were put under them, and the point of actual leakage, not the drip, was penciled, the watches were set, the duties apportioned, and everything discussed and agreed on with his mate and Ada. Then, when the supper was ended and the poker game underway, he went up on the flying bridge. He had a flit gun with him, and his air mattress and a light blanket. He thought that he would lie down and think about nothing. Sometimes he could do this. Sometimes he could think about the stars without wondering about them, and the ocean without problems, and the sunrise without what it would bring. He felt clean from his scalp to his feet from the soaping in the rain that had beaten down on the stern, and he thought, "I will just lie here and feel clean." He knew there was no use thinking of the girl who had been Tom's mother, nor all the things they had done and the places they had been, nor how they had broken up. There was no use thinking about Tom. He had stopped that as soon as he had heard. There was no use thinking about the others. He had lost them too, and there was no use thinking about them. He had traded in remorse for another horse that he was riding now. So lie here now and feel clean from the soap and the rain, and do a good job at non-thinking. You learned to do it quite well for a while. Maybe you will go to sleep and have funny or good dreams. Just lie quiet and watch the night, and don't think. Ada or Henry will wake you if Peters gets anything. He was asleep in a little while. He was a boy again, and riding up a steep canyon. The canyon opened out, and there was a sandbar by the clear river that was so clear he could see the pebbles in the bed of the stream and then watch the cutthroat trout at the foot of the pool as they rose to flies that floated down the current. He was sitting on his horse and watching the trout rise when Ada woke him. The message read, "Continue search carefully westward," with the code name at the end. "Thanks," he said. "Let me have anything else."
"Of course. Go back to sleep, Tom."
"I was having a fine dream."
"Don't tell it to me," Ada said, "and maybe it will come true."
He went to sleep again, and when he went to sleep, he smiled because he thought that he was carrying out orders and continuing the search westward. "I have her pretty far west," he thought. "I don't think they meant this far west." He slept, and he dreamed that the cabin was burned, and someone had killed his fawn that had grown into a young buck. Someone had killed his dog, and he found him by a tree, and he woke, sweating. "I guess dreams aren't the solution," he said to himself. "I might as well take it the same as always without any hope of anesthetics. Go on and think it out. All you have now is a basic problem and your intermediate problems. That is all you have, so you better like it. You will never have good dreams anymore, so you might as well not sleep. Just rest and use your head until it won't work anymore, and when you go to sleep, expect to have the horrors. The horrors were what you won in that big crap game they run. You put it on the line, and you made your point and let it ride, and finally you dragged down the gift of uneasy, unpleasant sleep. You damn near dragged down not sleeping at all, but you traded that in for what you have, so you might as well like it. You're sleepy now, so sleep, and figure to wake up sweating, and what of it? Nothing at all of it. But do you remember when you used to sleep all night? With the girl, and always happy, and never woke unless she woke you to make love? Remember that, Thomas Hudson, and see how much good it will do you. I wonder how many dressings they have for that other wounded character. If they had time to get dressings, they had time to get other stuff, too. What stuff? What do you think they have besides what you know they have? I don't think much. Maybe pistols. And a few machine pistols. Maybe some demolition charges they could make something out of. I have to figure that they have the machine gun, but I don't think so. They wouldn't want to fight. They want to get the hell away and on a Spanish ship. If they had been in shape to fight, they would have come back that night and taken Confites. Maybe no. Maybe something made them suspicious, and they saw our drums on the beach and thought we might be basing their nights. They wouldn't know what we were. but they would see the drums and figure there was something around that burned plenty of gas. Then, too, they probably didn't want to fight with their wounded. But the boat with the wounded could have laid off at night while they came in and took the wireless station if they wanted to get off with that other sub. I wonder what happened with her. There's something very strange about that. Think about something cheerful. Think about how you start with the sun at your back. And remember, they have local knowledge now, along with all that salt fish, and you're going to have to use your head. He went to sleep and slept quite well until 2 hours before daylight, when the sandflies awakened him. Thinking about the problems had made him feel better, and he slept without dreaming. Chapter 12. They left before the sun was up, and Thomas Hudson steered down the channel that was like a canal, with the gray banks showing on either side. By the time the sun was up, he was out through the cut between the shoals, and he steered due north to get into blue water and past the dangerous rocky heads of the outer reef. It was a little longer than running on the inside, but it was much safer. When the sun rose, there was no wind and not enough swell for the sea to break on any of the rocks. The day would be hot and muggy, he knew, and there would be squalls in the afternoon. His mate came up and looked around. Then he looked carefully at the land and along it to where the high, ugly tower of the light showed.
We could have run down easily on the inside.
I know it, Thomas Hudson said, but I thought this was better.
Another day like yesterday, but hotter.
They can't make much time.
They can't make any time. They'll be calm somewhere. You're going to check with the light whether they went into the cap between Paradon and Coco, aren't you?
Sure.
I'll go in. I know the keeper. You can head just inside the little key at the tip. I won't be gone long,
Antonio said. I don't even need to anchor.
You got plenty of strongback people to get anchors up.
Send up Ada and Willie if they've eaten. Nothing should show here this close to the light, and you can't see a damn thing looking into the sun, but send up George and Henry, too. We might as well do it right.
Remember, the rocks make right up to your blue water here, Tom.
I remember, and I can see them.
Do you want your tea cold?
Please. And a sandwich. Send the men up first.
They'll be right up. I'll send the tea up and have everything ready to go ashore.
Be careful how you talk to them.
That's why I am going in.
Put out a couple of lines, too. It will look better coming in on the light.
Yes,
his mate said.
We might guess something we could give them at the light.
The four came up and took their usual posts, and Henry said,
Did you see anything, Tom?
One turtle with a seagull flying around him. I thought he was going to perch on his back, but he didn't.
Mi capitán,
said George, who was a taller Basque than Ada and a good athlete and a fine seaman, but not nearly as strong as Ada in many ways.
Mi señor obispo, said Thomas Hudson.
Okay, Tom, George said. If I see any really big submarines, do you want me to tell you?
If you see one as big as the one you saw that time, keep it to yourself.
I dream about her nights,
George said.
Don't talk about her, Willie said. I just ate breakfast. When we closed, I could feel my cojones going up like an elevator, Ada said. How did you really feel, Tom?
Scared.
I saw her come up, Ada said, and the next thing I heard Henry say, she's an aircraft carrier, Tom.
That's what she looked like, Henry said. I can't help it, I'd say the same thing again.
She spoiled my life, Willie said. I've never been the same since. For a nickel, I'd have never gone to sea again.
Here, said Henry. Take 20 cents and get off at Paradon Grande. Maybe they'll give you change.
I don't want change. I'll take a transfer.
Would you really?
Henry asked. There had been a certain amount of bad blood between them since the last two times they'd been in Havana.
Listen, expensive, Willie said. We're not fighting submarines, or you wouldn't have come up without sneaking a quick one. We're only chasing crowds to kill them in a decked over a half-open boat. Even you ought to be able to do that.
Take the 20 cents anyway, Henry said. You'll need it someday.
To stick up!
Cut it out, the two of you. Cut it out,
Thomas Hudson said. He looked at both of them.
I'm sorry, Tom, Henry said.
I'm not sorry,
Willie said.
But I apologize. Look, Tom, said Ada. Almost a beam, inshore.
That's the rock that's just awash, Thomas Hudson said. It shows further to the eastward on the chart.
No, I mean further in. About a half a mile.
That's a man crawfishing or hauling fish traps.
Do you think we ought to speak to him?
He's from the light, and Antonio's going in to talk with them at the light.
Fish! Fish!
His mate called, and Henry asked,
May I take him, Tom?
Sure, send Gil up. Henry went down, and in a little while the fish jumped and showed he was a barracuda. Then, a little later, he heard Antonio grunt as he hit him with the gaff, and then he heard the thunking knocks of the club on its head. He waited for the splash of the fish being thrown back, and looked at the wake to see his size. There was no splash, and he remembered that barracuda were good to eat on this stretch of the coast, and Antonio was saving him to take into the light. Just then he heard the double shout of fish, and this time there was no jumping, and the line was singing out. He turned out further into the blue water and slowed down both engines. Then, as the line kept going out, he threw out one motor and made a half turn toward the fish.
Wahoo! His mate called out. Big one!
Henry brought the fish in, and they looked down over the stern and saw him long and oddly pointed, his stripes showing clearly in the blueness of the deep water. When he was nearly within reach of the gaff, he turned his head and made another fast, deep run that took him out of sight in the clear water in less time than a man could snap his fingers.
They always have that one run, Ada said. It goes like a bullet.
Henry brought him in fast, and they watched over the stern as he was gaffed and brought aboard rigid and trembling. His stripes showed a bright blue, and his jaws that could cut like razors opened and closed with spasmodic uselessness. Antonio laid him in the stern, and his tail beat against the deck.
Que peto más hermoso, Ada said.
He's a beautiful wahoo, Thomas Hudson agreed, but we'll be out here all morning if this keeps up. Leave out the lines, but take the leaders off, he said to his mate. He steered for just outside the light on its high point of rock and tried to make up the time they had lost and still act as though they were fishing. The friction of the lines in the water bent the rods. Henry came up and said,
He was a beautiful fish, wasn't he? I'd love to have had him on light tackle. Don't they have an extraordinarily shaped head?
What will he weigh? Willie asked.
Antonio said he'd weigh about 60, Willie. I was sorry I didn't have time to call you. It really should have been yours.
That's all right, Willie said. You caught him faster than I could, and we have to get the hell along. I bet we could catch plenty good fish along here.
We'll come sometime after the war.
I'll bet, said Willie. After the war, I'm going to be in Hollywood and be a technical advisor on how to be a horse's ass at sea.
You'll be good at it.
I ought to be. I've been studying now for over a year to train me for my career.
What the hell you got so much black ass about today, Willie? Thomas Hudson asked.
I don't know. I woke up with it.
Well, go down to the galley and see if that bottle of tea is cold and bring it up. Antonio's butchering the fish. So make me a sandwich, will you, please?
Sure. What kind of sandwich?
Peanut butter and onion, if there's plenty of onion.
Peanut butter and onion it is, sir.
And try to get rid of your black ass.
Yes, sir. Black ass gone, sir.
When he was gone, Thomas Hudson said, You take it easy with him, Henry. I need the son of a bitch, and he's good at his stuff. He's just got black ass.
I try to be good with him, but he's difficult.
Well, try a little harder. You were needling him about the 20 cents. Thomas Hudson looked ahead at the smooth sea and the innocent-looking deadliness of the reef off his port bow. He loved to run just off a bad reef with a light behind him. It made up for the times when he had to steer into the sun, and it made up for several other things.
I'm sorry, Tom, Henry said. I'll watch what I say and what I think.
Willie was back up with the empty rum bottle full of tea, wrapped in a paper towel and with two rubber bands around it to keep the towel in place.
She's cold, Skipper, he said, and I have insulated her.
He handed a sandwich wrapped in a paper towel segment to Thomas Hudson and said,
One of the highest points in the sandwich maker's art. We call it the Mount Everest Special, for commanders only.
In the calm, even on the bridge, Thomas Hudson smelled his breath. Don't you think it's a little early in the day, Willie?
No, sir.
Thomas Hudson looked at him speculatively. What did you say, Willie?
No, sir. Didn't you hear me, sir?
Okay, Thomas Hudson said. I heard you twice. You heard this once. Go below, clean up the galley properly, and then go up in the bow where I can see you and stand by to anchor.
Yes, sir,
said Willie.
I don't feel well, sir.
Fuck how you feel, you sea lawyer. If you don't feel well, you're going to feel a damn sight worse.
Yes, sir,
Willie said.
I don't feel well, sir. I should see... The ship's surgeon.
You'll find him in the bow, Knock on the door of the head and see if he's there as you go by.
That's what I mean, sir.
What do you mean?
Nothing, sir.
He's skunk drunk, Henry said. No, he's not, Thomas Hudson said. He's drinking, but he's closer to crazy.
He's been strange for quite a while, Ara said. But he was always strange. None of us has ever suffered as he has. I have never even suffered at all.
Tom suffered, Henry said, and he's drinking cold tea. Let's not talk morbid and let's not talk wet, Thomas Hudson said. I never suffered, and I like cold tea.
You never did before.
We learn something new all the time, Henry. He was coming up well on the light, and he saw the rock he should keep outside of now, and he thought this was a worthless conversation. Go up forward with him, Ara, and see how he's doing. Stick around with him. You get the lines in, Henry. George, get down and help Antonio with the dinghy. Go in with him if he wants you to. When he was alone on the bridge, he smelled the bird guano from the rock, and he rounded the point and anchored in 2 fathoms of water. The bottom was clean, and there was a big tide running. He looked up at the white-painted house and the tall, old-fashioned light, and then past the high rock to the green mangrove keys and beyond them, the low, rocky, barren tip of Cayo Romano. They had lived, off and on, for such a long time within sight of that long, strange, and pest-ridden key, and knew a part of it so well, and had come in on its landmark so many times, and under such good and bad circumstances, that it always made him an emotion to sight it, or to leave it out of sight. Now it was there at its barest and most barren, jutting out like a scrubby desert. There were wild horses and wild cattle and wild hogs on that great key, and he wondered how many people had held the illusion that they might colonize it. It had hills rich in grass with beautiful valleys and fine stands of timber, and once there had been a settlement called Versailles where Frenchmen had made their attempt at living on Romano. Now all the frame buildings were abandoned, but the one big house and one time when Thomas Hudson had gone in there to fill water, the dogs from the shacks were huddled with the pigs that had burrowed in the mud, and the dogs and pigs were both gray from the solid blanket of mosquitoes that covered them. It was a wonderful key when the east wind blew day and night, and you could walk 2 days with a gun and be in good country. It was country as unspoiled as when Columbus came to this coast. Then, when the wind dropped, the mosquitoes came in clouds from the marshes. To say they came in clouds, he thought, is not a metaphor. They truly came in clouds, and they could bleed a man to death. The people we are searching for would not have stopped in Romano, not with this calm. They must have gone further up the coast.
Ara, he called. What is it, Tom?
Ara asked. He always swung up onto the bridge and landed as lightly as an acrobat, but with the weight of steel. What's the score?
Willie is not himself, Tom. I took him out of the sun and made him drink and made him lie down. He's quiet now, but he looks at things too fixedly.
Maybe he had too much sun on his bad head.
Maybe it's something else.
What else?
Gil and Peters are sleeping. Gil had the duty to keep Peters away last night. Henry is sleeping and George went in with Antonio.
They should be back soon.
They will be.
We must keep Willie out of the sun. I was stupid to send him forward, but I did it for discipline, without thinking.
I am disassembling and cleaning the big ones, and I checked all the fuses from the dampness and rain of last night on the other stuff. Last night after the poker game, we disassembled and cleaned and oiled everything.
Now, with the dampness, we have to make a daily check whether anything is fired or not.
I know, Ara said. We ought to disembark, Willie, but we can't do it here.
Cayo Frances?
We could, but Havana would be better, and have them ship him from there. He's going to talk, Tom.
Thomas Hudson thought of something and regretted it.
We never should have taken him after he had a medical discharge and with a bad head, Ara said.
I know, but we did. How many damn mistakes have we made?
Not too many, Ara said. Now may I go down and finish the work?
Yes, Thomas Hudson said. Thank you very much.
A sus órdenes, Ara said.
I wish to hell they were better orders, Thomas Hudson said. Antonio and George were coming out with the dinghy, and Antonio came up on the bridge immediately and let George and Henry hoist the motor and the dinghy aboard. Well, Thomas Hudson said,
They must have gone by in the night, on the last of the breeze, Antonio said. They would have seen them at the light if they came into the cut. The old man who has the skiff and the fish traps hadn't seen any turtle bone. He talks about everything, and he would have mentioned it, the lightkeeper said. Do you think we ought to go back and check with him?
No. I think they're down at Puerto Coco, or else at Guillermo.
That's about where they would have reached with what wind they had.
You sure they couldn't have gone through the cut at night?
Not with the best pilot that ever lived.
Then we have to find them in the lee of Coco, or down by Guillermo. Let's get the anchor up and go. It was a very dirty coast, and he kept outside of everything and ran the edge of the 100-fathom curve. Inshore, there was a low, rocky coast and reefs and big patches of banks that came out dry with the low tide. There was a 4-man watch, and Gil was on Thomas Hudson's left. Thomas Hudson looked toward the shore and saw the beginning of the green of the mangroves and thought, what a hell of a place to be now in this calm. The clouds were piled high already, and he thought the squalls would come out earlier. There are about 3 places past Puerto Coco that I must search, he thought. I'd better hook her up a little more and get in there. Henry, he said, steer 285, will you? I want to go below and see Willie. Sing out if you sight anything. You don't need to watch inshore, Gil. Take the starboard watch forward. That's all too shallow inshore for them to be in there.
I'd like to watch inshore, Gil said. If you don't mind, Tom, there's that crazy channel that makes in almost against the beach, and a guy could have taken them there and put them in the mangroves.
Good, said Thomas Hudson. I'll send up Antonio.
I could see her mast in the mangroves with these big glasses.
I doubt it like hell, but you might.
Please, Tom, if you don't mind.
I agreed already.
I'm sorry, Tom, but I thought a guy might take her in there. We went in there once.
And we had to come out the same way we went in.
I know, but if the wind failed them and they had to hide in a hurry, we don't want to overrun them.
Right. But we are a long way out for you to see a mast. Besides, they would probably cut mangroves to hide the mast from the air.
I know, said Gil with Spanish stubbornness. But I have very good eyes, and these are 12-power glasses, and it is calm, so I see well, and
I said it was okay before.
I know, but I had to explain.
You've explained, Thomas Hudson said. And if you find a mast, you can stick it up my ass with peanuts on it. Gil felt a little hurt at this, but he thought it was funny, especially about the peanuts, and he searched the mangroves until the big glasses almost pulled the eyes out of his head. Below, Thomas Hudson was talking with Willie and watching the sea and the land. It was always strange how much less you saw when you were down from the bridge, and as long as things went well below, he felt a fool to be anywhere but at his post. He tried always to keep the necessary contact and avoid the idiocy of the uninspecting inspection, but he had delegated more and more authority to Antonio, who was a much better sailor than he was, and to Ara, who was a much better man. They are both better men than I am, he thought, and yet I should still be in command, using their knowledge and talent and their characters. Willie, he said, how are you, really?
I'm sorry about acting like a fool, but I'm sort of bad, Tom.
You know the rules about drinking, Thomas Hudson said. There aren't any. I don't want to use chicken shit words like the honor system.
I know, Willie said. You know I'm not a rummy.
We don't ship rummies.
Except Peters.
We didn't ship him. They gave him to us. He has his problems, too.
Old Angus is his problem, Willie said. And his goddamn problems get to be our problems too damn fast.
We'll skip him, Thomas Hudson said. You have anything else eating you?
Just in general.
How?
Well, I'm half crazy, and you're half crazy, and then we've got this crew of half-saints and desperate men.
It isn't bad to be half-saint and half-desperate man.
I know it. It's wonderful. But I was used to things being more regular.
Willie, there's nothing eating you, really. The sun bothers your head, and I'm sure drinking isn't good for it.
I'm sure, too,
Willie said.
I'm not trying to be a fuck-up, Tom, but did you ever go really crazy?
No, I always missed it.
It's a lot of bother, Willie said. And however long it lasts too long. But I'll stop drinking.
No, just drink easy like you always did.
I was using the drinking to stave it off.
We're always using drinking for something.
Sure, but this wasn't any gag. You think I lied to you, Tom?
We all lie, but I don't think you'd lie on purpose.
Go up on your bridge, Willie said. I see you watching the water all the time like it was some girl that was gonna get away from you. I won't drink anything except seawater, maybe, and I'll help Ara break them to pieces and put them together again.
Don't drink, Willie.
If I said I won't, I won't.
I know.
Listen, Tom, can I ask you something?
Anything.
How bad is it with you?
I guess pretty bad.
Can you sleep?
Not much.
Last night?
Yes.
That was from walking the beach,
Willie said.
Go on up and forget about me. I'll be working with Ara at our trade.
Chapter 13. They had searched the beach for tracks at Puerto Coco, and they searched the mangroves beyond with the dinghy. There were some really good places for a turtle boat to hide, but they found nothing, and the squalls came out earlier with heavy rain that made the sea look as though it were leaping into the air in white, spurting jets. Thomas Hudson had walked the beach and gone back inland behind the lagoon. He had found the place where the flamingos came at high tide, and he had seen many wood ibis, the cocos that gave the key its name, and a pair of roseate spoonbills working in the marl of the edge of the lagoon. They were beautiful, with the sharp rose of their color against the gray marl, and their delicate, quick, forward-running movements, and they had the dreadful, hunger-ridden impersonality of certain wading birds. He could not watch them long because he wanted to check in case the people they were looking for had left the boat in the mangroves and camped in the high ground to be clear of the mosquitoes. He found nothing but the sight of an old charcoal burning, and he came out onto the beach after the first squall hit and Ara had picked him up in the dinghy. Ara loved running the outboard in the rain and a bad squall, and he had told Thomas Hudson none of the searchers had found anything. Everybody was on board but Willie, who had taken the furthest stretch of beach beyond the mangroves.
And you?
Ara asked. Me, nothing.
This rain will cool off, Willie. I'm going to get him when I put you on board. Where do you think they are, Tom?
At Guillermo, that's where I'd be.
Me too, and that's what Willie thinks too.
How was he?
He's trying hard, Tom. You know Willie?
Yes, said Thomas Hudson. They came alongside, and he climbed aboard. Thomas Hudson watched Ara pivot the dinghy on her stern and go off into the white squall. Then he called down for a towel and dried himself off on the stern. Henry said,
Don't you want a drink, Tom? You were really wet.
I'd like one.
You want straight rum?
That's nice, Thomas Hudson answered. He went below to get a sweatshirt and shorts, and he saw that they were all cheerful.
We all had a straight rum, Henry said, and brought him a glass half full. I don't think that way if you dry off quickly anyone can catch cold, do you?
Hi, Tom, said Peters. Have you joined our little group of health drinkers?
When did you wake up? Thomas Hudson asked him.
When I heard a gurgling noise.
I'll make a gurgling noise some night and see if that wakes you up.
Don't worry, Tom. Willie does that for me every night.
Thomas Hudson decided not to drink the rum. Then, seeing them all having had a drink and being cheerful and happy on an uncheerful errand, he thought it would be pompous and priggish not to take it. He wanted it, too. Split this with me, he said to Peters. You're the only son of a bitch I ever knew that could sleep better with earphones on than without them.
That splits nothing,
Peters said, entrenching himself in the retreat from formal discipline.
That split doesn't give either of us anything.
Get one of your own, then, Thomas Hudson said. I like the goddamn stuff as well as you do. The others were watching, and Thomas Hudson could see Henry's jaw muscles twitching.
Drink it up, Thomas Hudson said, and run all your mysterious machines tonight as well as you can for yourself and for the rest of us.
For all of us, Peters said. Who is the hardest working man on this ship?
Ara, Thomas Hudson said, and sipped the rum for the first time as he looked around. And every fucking buddy else on board.
Here's to you, Tom, Peters said.
Here's to you, Thomas Hudson said, and felt the words die cold and stale in his mouth. To the earphone, King, he said, in order to recover something he had lost. To all gurgling noises, he added, being now a long way ahead as he should have been at the start.
To my commander,
Peters said, running his string out too far. Any way you want to take it, Thomas Hudson said. There are no articles that cover that with us, but I'll settle for that. Say it again.
To you, Tom. Thanks, Thomas Hudson said, but I will be a sad son of a bitch before I drink to you until all your radios and you are functioning. Peters looked at him, and into his face there came the discipline, and into his body, which was in bad shape, the carriage of a man who had served 3 hitches in something that he had believed in and left for something else, as Willie had, and he said, automatically and without reservations, "Yes, sir."
"Drink to you," Thomas Hudson said, "and crank up all your fucking miracles."
"Yes, Tom," Peter said, without any cheating and without reservations.
Well, I guess that's enough of that, Thomas Hudson thought. I better leave it as it lays and go back to the stern and watch my other problem child come aboard. I can never feel about Peters the way the rest of them all feel. I hope I know as well as they do what his defects are, but he has something. He is like the false carried so far that it is made true. It is certain that he is not up to handling what we have, but maybe he is up to much better things. Willie's the same, he thought. One is as bad one way as the other. They ought to be in now. He saw the dinghy coming through the rain, and the white drifted water that curled and blew under the lash of the wind. They were both thoroughly wet when they came aboard. They had not used their raincoats, but had kept them wrapped around their niños.
"Hi, Tom," Willie said. "Nothing but a wet ass and a hungry gut."
"Take these children,"
Ada said, and handed the wrapped submachine guns aboard. "Nothing?"
"Nothing multiplied by 10.
Willie said. He was standing on the stern, dripping, and Thomas Hudson called to Gil to bring 2 towels. Ada pulled the dinghy in by her painter and climbed aboard.
"Nothing of nothing of nothing," he said. "Tom, do we get overtime for rain?" "We ought to clean those weapons right away," Willie said. "We'll get dry first," Ada said. "I'm wet enough. First I could never get wet, and now I have goose flesh even on my ass." "Tom," Willie said. "You know those sons of bitches can sail in these squalls that they reef down and have the balls to."
"I thought of that too."
"I think they lay up in the daytime with the calm and then run with these afternoon squalls."
"Where do you put them?"
"I don't put them past Guillermo, but they could be."
"We'll start at daylight and catch them at Guillermo tomorrow."
"Maybe we'll find them and maybe they'll be gone."
"Sure."
"Why the hell haven't we got radar?"
"What good would it do us right now? What do you see in the screen, Willie?"
"I'll pipe the hell down," Willie said. "Excuse me, Tom, but chasing something with UHF that hasn't got a radio?"
"I know," said Thomas Hudson. "But do you want to chase any better than we've been chasing?"
"Yes. Is that okay?"
"Okay."
"I want to catch the sons of bitches and kill every one of them."
"What good would that do?"
"You don't remember the massacre?"
"Don't give me any of that massacre shit, Willie. You've been around too long for that."
"Okay. I just want to kill them. Is that all right?"
"It's better than the massacre thing, but I want prisoners from a U-boat operating in these waters who can talk."
"The last one you had didn't talk much."
"No, neither would you if you were up the creek like he was."
"Okay,"
Willie said.
"Can I draw a slug of the legal?"
"Sure. Get on dry shorts and a shirt and don't make trouble."
"With nobody?"
"Grow up," Thomas Hudson said.
"Drop dead,"
Willie said and grinned. "That's the way I like you," Thomas Hudson told him. "Keep it that way." Chapter 14. That night there was heavy lightning and thunder, and it rained until about 3 o'clock in the morning. Peters could get nothing on the radio, and they all slept hot and muggy until the sandflies came out after the rain stopped and wakened them one after the other. Thomas Hudson pumped flit down below, and there was coughing, and then less restless moving and slapping. He waked Peters by flitting him thoroughly, and Peters shook his head with the earphones on and said softly, "I've been trying hard, Tom, all the time, but there's nothing." Thomas Hudson looked at the glass with a torch, and it was rising. That will give them a breeze, he thought. Well, they can't say they haven't had luck again. Now I must figure that. He went back to the stern and sprayed all the flit he could into the cabin without waking the people. He sat in the stern and watched the night clear and flitted himself occasionally. They were short of repellent, but had plenty of flit. It burned where a man had been sweating, but it was better than sandflies. Their effect differed from mosquitoes in that you could not hear them before they hit, and there was an instant itching from the bite.
The bites made a swelling about the size of a very small pea. In some places on the coast and on the Keys, they were more virulent than in others. At least their bites seemed to be much more annoying, but he thought that could be the condition that our hides are in and how much they are burned and toughened. I do not know how the natives stand them. They have to be hardy people to live on this coast and in the Bahamas when the trades aren't blowing. He sat in the stern, watching and listening. There were two planes high in the sky, and he listened to the throbbing of the motors until they no longer could be heard. Big Bomber is going to Camagüey on the way to Africa, or going straight through to somewhere and nothing to do with us. Well, he thought, they are not bothered by sandflies. Neither am I. The hell with them. The hell with them, and the hell I'm not. But I'd like to get some daylight and get out of here. We've checked all the way up to the end of the point, thanks to Willie, and I'll run the little channel right along the edge of the bank. There's only one bad place, and with the morning light I can see it okay, even in a calm. Then we'll be at Guillermo. They were underway at daylight, and Gil, who had the best eyes, was watching the green shoreline with the 12-power glasses. They were close enough to shore for him to see a cut mangrove branch. Thomas Hudson was steering, Henry was watching out to sea, Willie was backing up Gil.
"They're past this part anyway," Willie said.
"But we have to check," Ara said. He was backing up Henry.
"Sure," Willie said. "I was just commenting."
"Where's that Don patrol from that damn molasses ship at Cayo Frances?"
"They don't patrol on Sundays, do they?"
Willie asked.
"This must be a Sunday."
"There's going to be a breeze," Ara said. "Look at the cirrus."
"I'm afraid of one thing," Thomas Hudson said, "that they've gone in through the pass at Guillermo."
"We'll have to see."
"Let's hook the hell up and get there," Willie said. "This is getting on my nerves."
"That's the impression I get sometimes," Henry said.
Willie looked at him and spat over the side.
"Thank you, Henry,"
he said.
"That's the impression I wish to give."
"Break it up," Thomas Hudson said. "See that big coral head to starboard that's just awash? That's what we have to not hit. On the inside, gentlemen, is Guillermo. See how green she is and full of promise?"
"One more goddamn key," Willie said.
"Can you make out any smoke from charcoal burning?" Thomas Hudson asked. Gil swept it very carefully and said,
"No, Tom. The way it ran last night, there wouldn't be any smoke," Willie said.
"You're wrong for once, boy," Thomas Hudson said.
"Maybe."
"No, it could rain like hell all night and not put one of those big burnings out. I've seen it rain 3 days and hardly bother one."
"You know more about them than me," Willie said. "Okay, there could be smoke. I hope there is."
"That's a bad shoal," Henry said. "I don't believe they could run in those squalls along here."
In the morning light, they could see four terns and two gulls working around the shoal. They had found something and were diving. The terns were crying and the gulls were screaming.
"What are they into, Tom?" Henry asked.
"I don't know. It looks like a school of bait fish that is too deep for them to work."
"Those poor bastard birds have to get up early in the morning than we do to make a living," Willie said. "People don't appreciate the work they put in."
"How are you going to run, Tom?" Ara asked.
"Just as close into the bank as I can, and right up to the head of the key."
"Are you going to check that half-moon key with the wreck?"
"I'll make a turn around it close in and everybody glass it, then I'll anchor in the bight inside the tip of Guillermo."
"We'll anchor,"
Willie said. "That's implied. Why do you get so ornery this early in the morning?"
"I'm not ornery, I'm just admiring the ocean and this beautiful coast Columbus first cast his eyes on. I'm lucky I didn't serve under that Columbus."
"I always thought you did," Thomas Hudson said.
"I read a book about him in the hospital at San Diego," Willie said. "I'm an authority on him, and he had a worse fucked up outfit than this one."
"This isn't a fucked up outfit."
"No," said Willie, "not yet."
"Okay, Columbus boy, do you see that wreck that bears about 20 degrees to starboard?"
"That's for your starboard watch to see," Willie said. "But I can see it okay with my one eye that works, and there is a booby bird from the Bahamas perched on it. He's probably come to reinforce us."
"Good," said Thomas Hudson. "He's what we need."
"I probably could have been a great ornithologist," Willie said. "Grandma used to raise chickens."
"Tom," Ara said, "do you think we can work a little closer in? The tide is high now."
"Sure," Thomas Hudson answered. "Ask Antonio to get up in the bow and let me know how much water I have."
"You got plenty of water, Tom," Antonio called. Right into shore. You know this channel.
I know. I just wanted to be sure.
Do you want me to take her?
Thanks, said Thomas Hudson. I do not.
Now we can see the high ground beautifully, Ara said. You take all of her, Gil. I'll just back you up. Glass her really well. Who takes the first quarter of the sea?
Willie asked.
How come you switched on me anyway?
When Tom asked you to look at the rig, we switched automatically. When you went to starboard, I went to port.
That's too nautical for me, Willie said. When you want to be nautical, be right or not at all. Why don't you say right or left, the same as in steering?
It was you who said starboard watch, Henry said.
That's right, and from now on I'm going to say downstairs and upstairs and the front and the back of the boat.
Willie, get over with Gil and Ara and glass the beach, will you please, Thomas Hudson said. The beach and carry it up to the first third of the quay.
Yes, Tom, Willie said.
It was easy to see if there was anyone living on Cayo Guillermo on this, which was the windward side for nearly all of the year, but there was nothing showing as they moved close in along the coast. They came abeam of the point, and Thomas Hudson said, I'll circle the Half Moon Key as close as I can, and you all glass it. If you notice anything, we can stand by and put the dinghy in. The breeze was starting to rise, and the sea was beginning to move, but it did not break yet on the shoals because of the high tide. Thomas Hudson looked ahead at the small, rocky quay. He knew there was a sunken wreck at the western end of it, but it showed only as a red-brown bulge with this high tide. There was a shallow bank and a sandy beach on the inside of this quay, but he would not see the beach until he had rounded the wreck.
There's somebody living on the quay, Ara said. I see smoke. Right, said Willie. It's on the leeward side and the wind is carrying it to the west. The smoke is about at the center of where the beach should be, Gil said.
Can you see a mast?
No mast, Gil said. They could step the goddamn mast daytimes, Willie said.
Go to your stations, Thomas Hudson said. Ara, you stay here with me. Willie, tell Peters to get hooked up to talk whether anybody can hear him or not.
What do you think? Ara asked when the others were gone.
I think if I were fishing and drying fish, that I would have come off here from Guillermo when the comms came and brought the mosquitoes.
Me too.
They aren't burning any charcoal on this quay, and the smoke is small, so it must be a fresh fire.
Unless it's the end of a bigger one.
I thought of that.
Then we'll see in 5 minutes.
They rounded the wreck, which had another booby bird sitting on it, and Thomas Hudson thought, our allies are checking in fast. Then they were coming up into the lee of the quay, and Thomas Hudson saw the sand beach, the green behind it, and a shack with smoke coming from it.
Thank God, he said.
Equally, Ara said. I was afraid of the other thing, too.
There was no sign of any boats. We're really close to them, I think. Get in fast with Antonio and tell me what you find. I'll lay her in right along the bank. Tell them to stay at their stations and act natural. The dinghy spun and moved into the beach. Thomas Hudson watched Antonio and Ara walking toward the thatched shack. They were moving as fast as they could without running. They called to the shack and a woman came out. She was dark as a sea Indian and was barefooted, and her long hair hung down almost to her waist. While she talked, another woman came out. She was dark, too, and long-haired, and she carried a baby. As soon as she finished speaking, Ara and Antonio shook hands with the two women and came back to the dinghy. They shoved off and started the motor and came out. Antonio and Ara came up onto the flying bridge while the dinghy was being hoisted aboard.
There were two women, Antonio said. The men are outside fishing. The woman with the baby saw a turtle boat go into the channel that goes inside. It went in when this breeze came up.
That would be about an hour and a half ago, Thomas Hudson said, with the tide falling now.
Very strong, Antonio said. It's dropping very fast, Tom.
When she is down, there's not enough water to carry us through there.
No.
What do you think?
It's your ship.
Thomas Hudson swung the helm hard over and put in both motors up to 2,700 revolutions and headed for the point of the quay. They may run aground themselves, he said. The hell with it.
We can anchor if it gets too bad, Antonio said. It's a marl bottom if we run aground, marl and mud.
And rocky spots, Thomas Hudson said. Get Gil up here for me to watch for the stakes. Ara, you and Willie check all the weapons. Stay up here, please, Antonio.
The channel is a bastard, Antonio said. But it's not impossible.
She is impossible in low water, but maybe the other son of a bitch will ground too, or maybe the wind will fail.
The wind won't fail, Tom.
Antonio said.
It's firm and solid now for the trade wind.
Thomas Hudson looked at the sky and saw the long white hackles of clouds of the east wind. Then he looked ahead, at the point of the main key, at the spot of key and the flats that were beginning to show. There he knew his trouble would start. Then he looked at the mess of keys ahead that showed like green spots on the water.
Can you pick up the stake yet, Gil? He asked.
No, Tom.
It's probably only the branch of a tree or maybe a stick.
I can't see anything yet.
It ought to be dead ahead as we go.
I see it, Tom. It's a tall stick, dead ahead as we go.
Thank you, Thomas Hudson said.
The flats on either side were white yellow in the sun, and the tidal stream that came pouring out of the channel was the green water of the inner lagoon. It was not fouled nor cloudy from the marl of the banks because the wind had not had time to raise a sea that would disturb them. This made his piloting easier. Then he saw how narrow the cut was beyond the stake end, and he felt his scalp prickle.
You can make it, Tom, Antonio said. Hang close to the starboard bank. I'll see the cut when it opens up.
He hung close to the starboard bank and crawled along. Once he looked to the port bank and saw it was closer than the starboard, and he inched over to the right.
Is she throwing any mud? He asked.
Clouds.
They came to the wicked turn, and it was not as bad as he thought it would be. The narrow part they had come through was worse. The wind had risen now, and Thomas Hudson felt it blowing strongly on his bare shoulder as they ran broadside to it through this cut.
The stake is dead ahead, Gil said. It's only a branch of a tree.
I've got it.
Hold her hard against the starboard bank, Tom, Antonio said. We had this one beat.
Thomas Hudson hugged the starboard bank as though he were parking a car against a curb. It did not look like a curb, though, but like the indented, muddy terrain of an old battlefield, when they fought with great concentrations of artillery that had suddenly been revealed from the bottom of the ocean and spread out like a relief map on his right.
How much mud are we throwing?
Plenty, Tom. We can anchor when we get through this cut, this side of Contrabando, or in the lee of Contrabando, Antonio suggested.
Thomas Hudson turned his head and saw Cayo Contrabando looking small and green and cheerful, and he said,
The hell with that. Sweep that key in the channel that shows for a turtle boat, please, Gil. I see the next two stakes.
This channel was easy, but ahead he could see the sandbar on the right that was beginning to uncover. The closer they came to Cayo Contrabando, the narrower the channel became.
Hold her to port of that stake,
Antonio said. That's what I'm doing. They passed the stake, which was only a dead branch. It was brown and blowing in the wind, and Thomas Hudson thought that with this wind blowing up, they would have much less than the mean low water depths.
How's our mud? He asked Antonio.
Plenty, Tom.
Do you see anything, Gil?
Only the stakes.
The water was beginning to be milky now from the sea that had risen with the wind, and it was impossible to see the bottom nor the banks, except when the ship sucked them dry. This is no good, Thomas Hudson thought. But it is no good for them, either. And they have to tack in it. They must really be sailors. Now I have to decide whether they would take the old channel or the new one. That depends on their pilot. If he is young, he would probably take the new one. That is the one the hurricane blew out. If he is old, he will probably take the old channel from habit and because it is safer.
Antonio, he said, do you want to take the old canal or the new one?
They're both bad. It doesn't make much difference.
What would you do?
I'd anchor in the lee of Contrabando and wait for the tide.
We won't get enough tide to make it in daylight.
That's the problem. You only asked me what I would do.
I'm going to try to run the son of a bitch.
It's your ship, Tom, but if we don't catch them, somebody else will.
But why isn't Cayo Frances flying patrols over all this all the time?
They made that patrol this morning. Didn't you see it?
No, and why didn't you tell me?
I thought you saw it. One of those baby seaplanes.
Shit, Thomas Hudson said.
It must have been when I was in the head and the generator was running.
Well, it doesn't make any difference now, Antonio said. But Tom, the next two stakes are out.
Can you see the next two stakes, Gil?
I can't see any stakes.
The hell with it, Thomas Hudson said. All I have to do is hug that next chicken shit little key and keep off the sand spit that runs north and south of it. Then we'll case that bigger key with the mangroves, and then we'll try for the old or the new channel.
The east wind is blowing all the water out.
The hell with the east wind, Thomas Hudson said.
As he said the words, they sounded like a basic and older blasphemy than any that could have to do with a Christian religion. He knew that he was speaking against one of the great friends of all people who go to sea. So since he had made the blasphemy, he did not apologize. He repeated it.
"You don't mean that, Tom," Antonio said.
"I know it," Thomas Hudson said. Then he said to himself, making an act of contrition and remembering the verse unexactly, "Blow, blow, thou western wind, that the small rain down may rain, Christ, that my love were in my arms and I in my bed again." It's the same goddamn wind, only with the difference in latitude, he thought. They come from different continents, but they are both loyal and friendly and good. Then he repeated to himself again, "Christ, that my love were in my arms and I in my bed again." The water was so muddy now that there was nothing to steer by except the ranges and the suction the ship made of water from the banks. George was in the bow with the lead, and Otta had a long pole. They measured their depths and called back to the bridge. Thomas Hudson had the feeling that this had happened before, in a bad dream. They had run many difficult channels, but this was another thing that had happened sometime in his life. Perhaps it had happened all his life. But now it was happening with such an intensification that he felt both in command and at the same time the prisoner of it.
"Can you make out anything, Gil?" he asked.
"Nothing."
"You want Willie up here?"
"No, I see whatever Willie would see."
"I think he ought to be up anyway."
"As you wish, Tom."
10 minutes later, they were aground.